I'm delighted to welcome Bob Holman back to Around Cincinnati. We're talking with him by phone tonight from New York City, but he will be back in Cincinnati soon when Language Matters, his documentary, airs on WCET. Bob is a man of many talents. He's an award-winning published poet with at least 16 volumes to his credit. He's very involved with the performance of poetry. He's the founder of the Bowery Poetry Club and the Endangered Language Alliance, as well as a professor at Columbia University, just to name a few. We've talked earlier about his documentary titled Language Matters, and it will now be shown locally on WCET on Sunday, March 29th at 6 p.m., followed by a panel discussion about it with clips from the film that will take place at Xavier University on March 31st at 7 p.m. I am delighted to welcome you back to Around Cincinnati and to have this opportunity to talk further about what for me was a very eye-opening documentary, Language Matters. So this is now being shown around the country starting in January. Tell us, if you would, what the documentary focuses on and the three main places around the globe that you take us to.
Thanks so much, Barbara. And I'd just like to say that I got such wonderful feedback after the first interview that we did, and it's wonderful to be actually coming live to Cincinnati along with the broadcast. Language Matters takes us from Australia, from the tip of the island, the Northern Territories, a little island called Goulburn, where 400 people speak 10 different languages. This extraordinary place is also the home of Charlie Mangalda, the last speaker of Amardok. Now, you can talk a lot about the fact that there are languages disappearing at the rate of a couple a month or something like that. We can talk about how there's laws to protect endangered species of plants and animals, but who is even aware of the crisis with languages? But when you meet a person who is the last speaker, whose entire lineage is now resting on his shoulders, then you begin to understand the almost inhuman sadness that comes along with this situation. That's Charlie's place, and when you hear him at the beginning of Language Matters, you hear what it sounds like when the person who is speaking is singing to his ancestors because no one else is speaking his language. Of course, people say, well, who does he talk to then? And the answer is, you often find people who say, I can't speak it, but I understand it. That's the people who are around him, his grandchildren. Although they're not actually his grandchildren, the kinship patterns in the Aboriginal life are so complicated. It's like building a nuclear reactor, the way these people have designed their aunts and uncles, their poison cousins, and their grandmother language. Just incredible. But Charlie is a song man, and he sings his poems now for his ancestors, and they're the people that he's concerned with talking to. Mm. After Australia, we go to Wales. Now, Wales is not a country that you hear about as often as you do about the other parts of Great Britain, like Ireland and Scotland, because Wales has never made a big push for their independence the way those countries have. We all remember the recent election in Scotland, and of course, Ireland is an independent country, except for the North Ireland that stayed with England and Great Britain. But Wales, while everyone else was fighting for their political independence, was fighting for linguistic parity, was fighting so that the Welsh language and culture would be the equal of English in this small country that's stuck on the southwestern part of England. During the 60s, when we were seeing the Black Panthers and civil rights demonstrations, in Wales, it was the Welsh Language Society that used the same kind of nonviolent demonstrations to bring their language into an equivalency with English. All street signs are in Welsh and English. All the signs in the grocery store, when you get your tax form, they're going to be in Welsh and English. Now, people say, well, isn't that a lot of expense to do that? Well, not a lot of expense compared, say, to the defense budget. And the Welsh don't have an army. They're very perfectly happy to have Great Britain be the keeper of the armed forces. But what the Welsh are concerned with is that their Celtic culture that goes back thousands of years be a part of the ongoingness of these people. So in Wales, you find the only language that's been on the endangered list and then in the 1980s has came off it. It's still a struggle for the Welsh to keep their language alive. But in terms of the language crisis, they are a success story. And finally, we decided to end the story, not on that high note of, well, here's a success, but we decided to end the film, Language Matters, with the reality of a language that is struggling to survive. And the language we selected is the language of our 50th state, Hawaiian. A lot of people don't even know that there is a Hawaiian language, or that in 1978, Hawaiian, along with English, became an official language of the state of Hawaii. In fact, in the 1960s, they were down to about 400 speakers. Now they're at 30,000. How did that happen? And while 30,000 sounds like it's an incredible number, it still is a very small number compared with the English speakers, and it's a daily struggle for the Hawaiians to keep their language alive. Those are the places we visit that sort of give you a deeper look at these three languages, but actually they're significant in the language struggles that are going on right now globally.
Talk about what's lost when we lose a language's survival skills and a depth of knowledge about that particular
place. That's a good way of putting it. You know, a language is like a survival kit for a certain piece of the planet. Because of the way that civilization has moved to large nations and monolingual cultures, we tend to forget how languages originally evolved. And that was that each piece of land, each small tribe, group of people, wanted their own identities to be completely associated with where they lived and with their own families. So what you found in Australia, for example, was that if you were on a certain piece of ground, if you didn't know the language of the people who spoke there, you didn't speak. It was respect for the people who lived there and the ground that they lived on that was the language that was owned by this, or that that land and the people were owned by the language. We see a animated part of Language Matters tells us the creation story of Warramurrumungji, this sea goddess who came up on the land and dropped, not like you find in the creation myths that we know, the plants and the animals. She dropped languages. Here you'll speak Awaja. She says, here you'll speak Maung. Here you'll speak Amardok. The way we think of language as a communication, like I'm trying to do here, but in fact, languages also are identities, are who we are. That's what's lost when you lose a language. You lose that piece of what humanity is. The homogenizing that goes on with globalization, it can provide amazing benefits. We can now all talk to each other, Skype with each other, tweet to each other. But if we do that with the loss of who we are in that process, if we all become just anonymous consumers instead of an active participant in the culture that has made us, I think we have a real problem. We've lost a big part of what it is to be human.
Give us some brief numbers, if you would. Do you know approximately how many languages there might have been at one time in the world and how many there are now? How many are being lost?
Well, I'll tell you, right now, counting how many people speak a language is not the same thing as counting how many pandas are alive right now. When I was learning Welsh in Wales, it was always surprising to me that people I would be speaking Welsh with who were absolutely fluent, when it came up of who was fluent, some of them would say, oh, I'm not fluent. I wasn't born here. You should go over and talk with Gwyneth. She's fluent. On the other hand, people like me who were a learner, Dosgir, learning Welsh, Cymraeg, they would say, oh, I speak Welsh, because we're so proud of the little knowledge that we have that we can get our way around in the shops and in the daily hello, how are you rituals. Even the number of languages that there are is up for grabs. the famous saying is that a language is a dialect with an army. And while I find that funny, there is some truth in this, that if you say it's a language and you have enough people who back that up with artillery, that's going to be a language, and it can be the official language, and everybody should speak it. Generally, we call something a separate language when it's unintelligible to those around them. And that's why in this small part of Australia, where you have 50 languages in the range of 200 kilometers, aren't they just dialects of each other? No, sorry. The languages are as different as English and Polish. I said 50, but I meant 20. I don't want to exaggerate here. There's 20 languages there in the North Arnhem Land. Right now, we say that there are 6,000 languages that are in existence, and that of these 6,000, we will lose half of them this century if we don't start to respect languages, which means culture, which means each other, in the way that we understand that plants and animals work together in a physical ecology in our planet. We know how a small species that gobbles up the mosquitoes in one part of the world is going to allow these other species to stay alive, etc. We understand what it means when you reintroduce a top predator like a wolf into a place. But what does it mean when you lose a culture? It's a lot more intangible, but I don't think it's any less valuable. Even the accents that we have in our country. I grew up in Cincinnati. My mother's from Harlan, Kentucky. She used to say, I'm from the South, but you could never tell it by the way I talk. And Cincinnati is a great place to find a mix of accents. But when I visited lately, you don't hear those accents the way you used to, and I find it less interesting. And those are things that warm us up.
I'm interested in learning what their response to Language Matters has been, because it began showing on PBS earlier this year, so probably has been shown in several areas of the country by now. What have you found?
I found an extraordinary response. It's been very gratifying. We won the Documentary of the Year award at the Berkeley Video Film Festival, which was great. But where I'm really finding the response to be the most gratifying is with the languages of our country, the Native American languages, the Indians, who are seeing in this film a chance to show that it's not just a small and local occurrence, that in fact it's a global problem. And cultures, the different Indian languages, are gaining strength and encouragement by seeing that people around the world are going through the same problems that they are. Here in New York, where I work with the Endangered Language Alliance, we're seeing languages that have absolutely nothing in common culturally, finding that they have everything in common politically, that they're in the same place. It's the idea that having the mother tongue spoken at home while you learn English at school and on television, if that's not really respected and pushed, then you lose that speaking at home. By the time a child is in junior high, if they're raised in that situation, mother tongue at home exclusively or as much as possible, and then the bully language out on the streets with their friends in the school and on television, by the time the child is in junior high school, they're going to be perfectly fluent in both languages, or even three languages if they speak two languages at home. And not only will they be fluent, they will also have an IQ that's 10 points higher than their monolingual classmates. Being bilingual or multilingual actually gives your brain more of a workout and improves your IQ. This is a crisis that has an answer, and that is to support the use of a mother tongue at home, to support any kind of education that brings in multilinguality, bilinguality to kids using other languages, because learning a language before you can read or in your early years is so much different from trying to memorize verb forms and how to get the plural for different classes of nouns. You're just talking with your friends and your family, not memorizing.
It's so good to talk with you and to look forward to the local showing of Language Matters. And I also want to extend an early welcome home for your upcoming visit.
Thanks so much. I hope I get to meet some of the listeners, and I'll be looking for the responses to the CET broadcast on the 29th of March at 6 o'clock.
Thanks so much for visiting with us, Bob.
Thank you, Barbara.
I've been talking with Bob Holman about his documentary, Language Matters, that will be shown on WCET Sunday, March 29th at 6 p.m. You'll find more information about it and the event at Xavier University on March 31st at 7 p.m. at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray. I